Hello and welcome to this episode of the Sobre Mesa podcast with me, your host, Alan Maguire. Today with me, I have two guests, Nerea Fernandez, who is from, or is a coordinator from Mosquera Unida abroad. Welcome, Nerea.
Thanks a million. Thanks for your invite.
And I have Owen Gilmartin, who's a regular guest on the podcast, and he's a writer for Jacobin Tribune magazine and Open Democracy, and he often covers Spanish politics. Welcome back, Owen.
Hey, Alan. How are things?
Good, good. Yeah. The long summer has started here in Leganés. So today we're going to be talking about Unidas Podemos. It's often mistakenly referred to in the Western press as just Podemos, but Podemos is part of a bigger coalition, Unidas Podemos, which is part of another coalition, which is Izquierda Unida, which was the old left-wing coalition before Unidas Podemos. So it's a coalition inside of a coalition. So to any new listeners, we will be explaining this and how they come together to make Unidas Podemos. And Unidas Podemos are part of the national government. They are part of a national coalition with the PSOE, the Spanish Socialist Workers' Party, which is neither socialist, and I don't think many of the politicians have actually worked, but they are called the Socialist Party. They're sort of the centre-left party here in Spain, the historic left-wing vote. And Izquierda Unida were the historic, more further-left vote, one might say. And Nerea, you're going to give us a bit of an outline of what Izquierda Unida is, right? Could you tell us a bit about how they put the Unidas into Unidas Podemos? Sorry, that was terrible and cheesy, but
well, I'll do my best, because I know like the story is a little bit tricky, but I have to start with the beginning of Izquierda Unida and how we wanted to have this party, right? So after Franco died, Spain is all about after the Francism and how this society has been trying to work and get further and in our like social rights and everything. So we had the Communist Party, and the Communist Party was like very important during the transition. So in the 80s or so, the Communist Party was running in the elections, but people in the Communist Party thought and more Julio Anguita, who I think you believe, like I think you know who is it?
Yeah.
He was always talking about the left and how the left has to be united and like all different kind of left wings and everything, because in Spain, the right and the far right are very close. It's a huge monster like we have there. So it's just like the left has to be united in post to improve our life and society, right? So in the late 80s, beginnings of the 90s, Julio Anguita and his people there in the Communist Party thought it would be a good idea to have a party will be like a collection of parties. And that's how Izquierda Unida was created. Izquierda Unida means United Left. And that was like the first Unidas Podemos in our history. So the Communist Party was more like an organization and a political and social movement, where Izquierda Unida, it was more like institutional to run in the elections and all that kind of stuff. So that's how in Izquierda Unida there was like different parties, right? And that's how like Izquierda Unida was like getting bigger and bigger as a left party. So we get to now to the 2010s or so, where like the right wing in Spain was very strong, and there was like the economic crisis in the 28. And all these society and people were just like trying to struggle there in the streets, because like there was a load of people who had to leave Spain and migrate. It's like there was nothing left in Spain, like the jobs and the economic crisis was so bad. And that's how like people abroad started to get organized. So after the 50M movement, the Ignados movement, and these like new young people trying to, you know, do something better in Spain, Podemos was born in 2014, I think it was. And it was the same, like we had different lefty political parties, but when like we are a little bit different, for like we know exactly who the enemy or like how to fight the right wing and the far right. So that's how Podemos and Izquierda Unida in 2016, it was like they decided to go in a coalition as Unidas Podemos, just like electoral coalition, because it like there's no point to have different lefty political parties when the right is so strong, right? So after that, it was only like an electoral coalition, and now our goal is just like create more like popular unity in the Spanish society and working with the social movements and all the kind of stuff. And that's how Unidas Podemos was created.
And Owen, can you just give us a bit of a background on Podemos and how they sort of, as Nerea said, they wanted to start a new left-wing party come the 15M, which is, I think it's 10 years this year, isn't it? So can you just give us a
Yeah, exactly. It was the 10th anniversary, I guess, last month. Yeah, I mean, I guess Podemos started as a sort of political translation of the 15M movement, of the movement of the squares, taking up some of its rhetoric of neither left nor right, but, you know, instead those at the top against those at the bottom of society, or, you know, new politics, you know, the forces up for change versus the old establishment. And they had, you know, they had this meteoric rise in 2014, 2015, based around the leadership of Pablo Iglesias, who retired from politics last, about 2 months ago now, I guess. And yeah, I mean, they were a sort of left populist force, which sought to sort of, I guess, channel the anger and rage of Spanish society post 2008, at the financial crisis, at corruption, and, you know, the sort of deepening chasm between, I guess, the political system and ordinary life or society, you know? And yeah, in the 2015 election, they surged to just over 20% of the vote, running alone in that first election. And I think that was a very particular moment in Spain. I mean, I remember people, at that time I was teaching English, and I remember teaching English to a group of unemployed people. And the majority of them in, you know, Madrid were going to go off and vote for Podemos in that initial election. And I think, you know, they were able to create this sort of moment of, I guess, of hope, et cetera, et cetera, promising a break with austerity, promising, you know, a break in a sense with the sort of what they call the post-Francoist regime of 78. And they nearly sort of reached the sorpaso, the overtaking of the center-left socialist party, but just fell short. I think it was like 1% separated them. And I think, like with sort of these sort of left populist forces elsewhere, like Corbyn in the UK, or like Mélenchon in France, or Colau in, you know, in Barcelona, or whatever. Like you have this rapid initial surge, and then it is hard. It's hard to keep that momentum going. And I think in Spain, you saw between those first two elections, between December 2015 and then 6 months of institutional gridlock, and second elections then in was it July or June, June 2016, just sort of a wearing away of people's hopes and expectations. And I think this is sort of then extended beyond that, you know, those 6 months where there was a clear left-wing majority in parliament, where you know, Spain had voted for change, and it didn't, in a sense, as Pedro Sanchez would later admitted in an interview, he was blocked from forming a coalition by, I guess, the old guard of his party, the Socialist Party, and by the economic powers in Spain, by, you know, the oligarchs. I mean, you know, he gave a very famous interview for Salvados in which he said, you know, I was threatened. I was told, you know, by the directors of El País, by the CEO of Telefonica, different people, that, you know, if you go into coalition with Podemos, we will, you know, we will withdraw support for the socialists. And I think, I guess the story then of the last 7 years has been a sort of continuation of that, of this, you know, you've had this very fast, rapid rise of Podemos, and then the slow ebbing of support as, you know, they face gridlock, you know, this sort of institutional gridlock, four elections in 5 years, you know, this sort of establishment desire to keep them out of power initially, and you had the territorial conflict then in Catalonia, etc. And I think, in a sense, Unidos Podemos then comes out of that, initially running in 2016 together, and I guess was consolidated, has been consolidated in the years since then. The recent Congress, Podemos's fourth Congress, it was designed very much with their coalition role in mind. So it was, I mean, and it makes sense in those terms. Podemos was built around Iglesias as a charismatic leader. To lose him, and, you know, obviously his star has been in decline. His popularity has slowly been chipped away, particularly by various media scandals. But to lose him, the reaction of the party was more, how do we ensure smooth transition, which doesn't weaken us in our position in coalition? And so, you know, Iona Belares was his, you know, is basically Podemos's main negotiator. She negotiated the, you know, various budget deals, various laws, etc. You know, the Congress there was no strategic debates. There was no opposition as such. It was about, you know, swift, orderly transition of power, in a sense, a continuity list with basically, you know, the people who have been around Iglesias have now, you know, have continued in control of the party. And, you know, the level of participation was way down. I mean, I think it was, you know, the level of participation in the internal voting for the party documents for the new leader was only reached 34% of those who voted in 2017 in the famous sort of Vista Alegre, those Congress which pitted Iglesias against his former deputy leader, Íñigo Errejón. And so you have, you know, there has been this fall away of participation, of interest, of involvement. And the question is, how do you re-engage people at a time when your primary focus is on your institutional role, on delivering, you know, quite basic reforms at a national level? And so, you know, it's not an easy task.
No, it's quite the change to make. Okay, Owen, you mentioned quite a few names there. Ione Belera is the new leader of Podemos, the group Podemos, and Izquierda Unida, Alberto Garzón is the leader, I believe, or the coordinator. Mm-hmm. And then we have Yolanda Díaz, who as Pablo Iglesias left, but also Ione, her, as you said, Owen, it was at the Congress, was more like a celebration of the coalition. She sort of publicly supported Yolanda Díaz. Yolanda Díaz is the Minister of Labour. She's more popular apparently than a lot of, I think a couple of weeks ago, actually, she was more popular than the prime minister, more popular than Pedro Sanchez himself. So obviously she's going to be asked to be the candidate for Unidas Podemos. I think most people think she will accept it, but it does really show a transition, a change, a changing of the balance of forces, because I don't know if you'd agree, Nadia, but it seems like Izquierda Unida were always sort of the weaker partner of the coalition, or like the smaller partner maybe, because they sort of joined the Podemos wave, I don't know if you could put it that way. But it does seem that this could change things, right? And it's not just because she's going to be the candidate, but also there's the clash of what we've already talked about of being, you know, a media top-heavy organization that sort of its participants sort of vote on the internet, really, versus the, you know, the very active members of Izquierda Unida. And that's not to say that Podemos don't have active members, right? But Izquierda Unida has a long history of active members. So Nerea, I wondered what you thought about the balance within the coalition, not just at a national level, but also within the organization itself, or within both organizations, and how it'd be interesting to hear how it's reflected abroad, really.
Well, I mean, like, it's true, like, Podemos has like a stronger position, and all the media is just like all about Podemos. Like, they always forget about it, and to be honest, like, I'm happy about it, because, you know, Spanish media is a little bit complicated. But working in the government with Podemos, like, we work very, very well, and all the work is like completely like together and collective. For example, like today, but it's like this Tuesday, I don't know exactly what day it is, it's about 29th, is it?
Yeah.
We are, the parliament is approving the trans law, right? Mm. Like, you know, it's a huge step in trans rights and human rights. And that law is completely Izquierda Unida. That law, we did that a few years ago with our Federation of LGBTIQ rights. And we sent this proposition to Podemos and Irene Montero, the equality minister for equality, and mm-hmm. they completely accepted it. So that's like, maybe we don't have like that kind of like media sensation, but all the work like Podemos is doing, and it's with Izquierda Unida, and we can see like our work is getting there. Like, so yeah, I think in the next elections, we need to do another kind of agreement, and we always support Yolanda Díaz if she wants to be the leader of Unidas Podemos. And actually, Yolanda Díaz is from the Communist Party, it's not from Podemos. So I don't know, it's just like a completely mixed, different, and people coming from different backgrounds. But definitely, next elections are going to be very interesting, because this is like the first time the left, the proper left, is in the government since the Republic. So our goal is huge. Like, we need to do like a great work in both to see like how the next elections are gonna go. But I think PSOE is gonna be very well viewed actually in the Spanish society. I don't know. It's completely different. Like, all the political cycles this years have been mental, and you never know what is going to happen. Like, we didn't think we will be in government. Like, if you asked me 3 years ago, do you see yourself in government? I would say no. I wouldn't see my political leader, my general secretary, Alberto Garzón, in government, or like being a minister, or Enrique Santiago, the leader of the Communist Party, being a deputy. I don't know. It's just like a very interesting times. We need to do like the best work we can do, and we'll see. This is Spain. You never know with Spain.
No, that's I think that's half of the appeal. Owen, do you think what are your thoughts on how the change of leadership in both Podemos and Unidas Podemos is going to affect not only power relations within the coalition, the Unidas Podemos coalition, but also with the bigger coalition with the PSOE and messaging, I suppose, approach, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, no? I mean, I presume we're sort of 18 months, 2 years from the next elections. I mean, it depends. We'll see how long the coalition lasts for. But I think so much depends on the next year. I mean, I think obviously, like, the coalition came to power, was it like 6 weeks, 2 months before the pandemic began? So, you know, its first 18 months has just been dominated by managing the pandemic. Like, I mean, you know, it's in a sense, it really depends what happens. I think the next 6 months, you're going to have negotiations on labor reform, on the housing law, which is a huge point, I think, a huge issue for Podemos, Unidas Podemos. You know, Ione Valares is the minister negotiating that with the socialists. Can they get, you know, sort of strong rent controls, which was promised in the program for governments, and then in last year's budget deal as well. They have to deliver. I mean, I think that's a thing. I think you have to be somewhat sympathetic that, you know, they came to power just before the pandemic. And in a sense, that's been the focus. But now they need to deliver on some of the programmatic commitments, the more progressive elements, which the socialists so far have been very resistant towards, particularly, you know, I think labor reform, which is going to be led by Yolanda Diaz, and then the housing law are both key. There is a whole set of issues. I mean, I think, you know, they have to show they can deliver for their voters, and that, you know, progressive egalitarian change is possible through institutional engagements. I mean, you know, over the last 5 years, I think the rental costs in Spain have increased 10 times the rate of salaries. At the moment, you also see, you know, an unregulated electricity market. We've seen these huge increases in electricity bills for people. I mean, they have to be able to deliver sort of material advances and show that they can, you know, that change is possible. And I think the sort of disappointing results in Madrid for both parties, you know, nearly worse for the socialists. They lost 300,000 votes in the snap regional elections in May. I mean, there is frustration. People, partially because of the pandemic the measures around that. But, you know, Spain is one of the most unequal countries in Europe. And if you have a left wing, you know, yeah, I mean, the first left-wing coalition in 80 years with a party to the left of the Social Democrats involved, you know, that has to translate into legislative advances. And so far, there's been some very interesting, you know, interesting pieces of legislation, the riders law protecting platform workers, I think, again, spearheaded by Yolanda Diaz, is an interesting and innovative piece of legislation. But, you know, probably didn't go quite far enough and is, you know, quite contained to one sector. They need to be offering, you know, the left-wing voters sort of broad advances. And I think, particularly given the profile of Podemos' voters, rent controls is going to be key. I mean, they, you know, if you can't deliver rent controls, why are you in government? And I think that will determine a lot of things, no? Because we also have to remember Unidas Podemos are now facing certain competition from Más País, set up by Podemos's ex-deputy leader, Íñigo Errejón, a sort of ambiguous formation which moves between sort of being a sort of, you know, very much a sort of center-left green party to us, and then at moments moving to the left, a sort of eco-socialist profile. They sort of play that sort of ambiguous role quite well. And, you know, I think if, firstly, the question is, what is their relationship going to be in the next election? Are they going to run separately? And then if, you know, if Unidos Podemos cannot deliver on the more progressive aspects of the programmatic agreement, they're going to come out of the coalition pretty damaged, I think, even with a new leader. And I think, in a sense, there are two aspects. Yolanda Díaz is a much more popular, you know, I think pretty much the most popular figure on in the government. And, you know, her popularity ratings are much higher than Iglesias by the end. And that obviously, that's important. You need a figure who with broad appeal. But, you know, I think it's not enough. Like, you've chosen to go into coalition. You know, the coalition, in a sense, came at a moment, as Narea was saying, you know, we've had these very turbulent political cycles. And I think, you know, the coalition came at a moment when the left's fortunes were in decline. And it was meant, I think, as a sort of defensive maneuver, in a sense, to, you know, okay, there's no chance of us, I guess, leading a coalition or leading a government in the short term anymore. But if we can go in with the center-left, the Social Democrats, and at least deliver, you know, good, you know, a more minimal program of important social, economic, and economic reforms, we can go back to the country in a stronger position. You know, the final months of Iglesias' tenure as Podemos leader and as the deputy prime minister were marked by complete deadlock. You know, they have, it's going to be the same issue for Yolanda Díaz. You have to win. You have to be seen to be pushing the socialists to the left and winning delivering advances. I mean, I think, you know, governing is not easy. And I think, you know, you don't want to be too harsh on them, but there has been a tendency over the last year that wanted, for example, last year, the guaranteed minimum income scheme was one of their sort of poster policies, which Iglesias pushed, promising, I think it was past May, June last year, a year ago, promising to reach 850,000 low-income families. You know, it's been mired in sort of bureaucratic failings. Mm. And 1 year later, it's only reached about 250,000, I think, or at most 250,000 families. So, you know, I think they've had more than a million applicants. And it's just created a lot of frustration. There has been this gap between promise and delivery. And I think if they can't bridge that gap, you know, the negotiations around labor reform and the housing law are crucial in this respect. Tax reform, reforming things, you know, reforms on freedom of speech, on, you know, the gag law, on, you know, speech crimes, etc. These are all things they have to be delivering on, and they have to be, you know, part of the problem in the May regional elections in Madrid was the fact that Iglesias couldn't point to key gains of his 18 months in office. And I think, you know, he ended up running a very negative campaign against the threat of fascism, which is real, you know, like but you can't have a purely negative focus and tell people, look, you know, you're going to lose rights. This is, you know, it's fascism versus democracy. You know, it didn't work to mobilize people. And I think, you know, it will now depend. The next 6-9 months are key in terms of this coalition. How can Unidos Podemos push the socialists to the left?
Mm, yeah, no, I agree with your points about the negative campaign for Madrid. It started out really well as well, which was unfortunate. I think it started out a really good campaign, and then, events happened and it went very negative. And I think Izquierda Unida's report on that in Madrid was equally as, sort of agreed with what I just said, really. And I sort of saw that from watching the elections. And I suppose that sort of shows the ideological mess or conflicts within the coalition, right? You've got sort of Izquierda Unida, established hard, well, not hard, but, you know, established ideological line, militancy. And then you've got sort of Podemos, which is, I suppose, like in growing pains, really, like, you know, sort of growing up. It's in its teenage rebellious years where it doesn't really know what it wants to do when it's older. I should stop using this imagery, but
I'm not sure. Like, I think, just sorry, I'll very briefly on this, like, you know, there isn't a huge difference between now between the sort of the leadership of Izquierda Unida and Podemos. Like, I think, you know, you have to remember Podemos has fractured in three as such. And I think one of the other outstanding issues is the question of reaggregating a very fragmented left space, and if that's possible for the next election. But, you know, I don't think there's huge ideological differences between the two leaderships. I mean, Iglesias, Irene Montero, they all came from the communist youth. And, you know, sorry, Nere, maybe you want to come in there.
Oh, no, like, go ahead. Like, I completely agree with you. I think the only difference, I mean, like, it's just like, for example, we have in Izquierda Unida, like, formation, like ideological formation and how to keep delivering. And when Podemos is like, it's more like freely or kind of, and it's just like we work different. And I think that's like the main difference. But when you see things in perspective, like, we are kind of the same. We want to deliver improvement to the working class, keep doing more feminist politics, more diverse politics, and keep improving the society. So it's just like we need to try and to keep doing this. And I completely agree with you. Like, we need to be able to deliver what we promise. And PSOE is a little bit, sorry, but okay. And work with them is like really difficult, but it's just like, it's more like they wanted to be more agreement with Ciudadanos, PSOE, I mean, and but they have to deal with us now. And I know, like, for them, I think it's more painful for them than it's for us. It's just like, we're just like very cranky people. Just say like, oh, no, we have to do this now, the rent control. And we need to, we're starting that, like, well, one of our programs in the electoral programs is just like to have a public electricity companies. Because, like, I don't know if you know, but in the 90s in Spain, the electricity companies were public and they were nationalized. And then Aznar and the Popular Party, they privatized. So we are trying to go back to that. And
the other thing as well is the state apparatus in Spain is just, you know, it's dreadful. I mean, anyone that's lived in a foreign country probably knows the bureaucracy better than the natives, because they have to go through more paperwork and, you know, going queuing outside a bank at 9 o'clock in the morning because you're not a client to pay a £13 tax with three pieces of photocopied paper. Anyone that lives in Spain knows what I'm on about. And I suppose, you know, that's part of the reason for the universal basic, not universal basic, universal vital income, right? The reason that it cannot get to all of these people is because the apparatus is so big and clunky. And I suppose, you know, that's another thing to take in consideration, but maybe people won't take that into consideration when they vote. I'm not sure, you know.
With the guaranteed minimum income, there was a few issues. I think with the design of the actual policy, there were problems. It's also just, I mean, I think it's not so much bureaucracy as after 10 years of cuts, austerity, a personnel freeze, they didn't have the qualified personnel to actually process a lot of the applicants. And the fact that it was a socialist minister overseeing the implementation of a policy. Like, the policy was designed by Iglesias' ministry and then was implemented by the PSOE socialist minister. And they didn't, I think in some ways, rivalry meant it wasn't a priority for them.
Right.
Partially, they seem to have undermined its implementation. And there was a sort of tension between, I guess, you know, was it a measure designed to sort of alleviate some of the problems related to the pandemic and the loss of income due to the pandemic, or was it solely a policy targeted at long-term poverty? And I think at the end, yeah, it does seem the best way minister basically undermined the policy. We'll see in the going forward. I mean, it's still a policy that could work. I think two things. One, Narae was saying, I think she's right, like that having a solid left-wing organization, structured, and which, you know, educates its activists, and which has a clear ideological line, has, you know, means, you know, it is a sturdier organization. I mean, I think the problem with Podemos in some ways was, I mean, the great thing about Podemos in the initial moment was you would go to some of the circle, the sort of grassroots meetings, and it was such a weird mix of people from, you know, different backgrounds, completely different perspectives, politically, socially, ideologically. And it made it sort of exciting, but it was all a bit incoherent. And in a sense, yeah, the leadership just imposed the coherence from the top. But once, in a sense, once that wave of initial enthusiasm disappeared, those people sort of, you know, dissipated a lot, and, you know, you were left with a not very active base. The other thing I would say is, I think, you know, as Narae said, you know, the socialist priority was primarily, they wanted a coalition, obviously, with the centre-right or the liberal righteous party, Ciudadanos. And because of, you know, various issues, it didn't work out. But I think one of Iglesias' achievements in office, I think, has been to forge an alternative, plurinational majority, which includes the Catalan nationalists. You know, I think when you think back to where the Socialist Party was in the November 2019 election, with its hard line on Catalan independence and the Catalan leadership, you know, ruling out any possibility of pardoning the jailed Catalan leaders, and then, you know, obviously last week, that's exactly what Pedro Sanchez did, and that is, you know, even in the budget negotiations before Christmas, he wanted a deal which included Ciudadanos, included this liberal righteous party, and Iglesias forced an alternative majority. And I think if there has been one clear, that is one clear, I think, success of his time in office, is that he has managed to steer the socialists away from a confrontational line in Catalonia and towards cooperation. Because at the end of the day, the only stable majority available is with, you know, Esquerra Republicana and other Catalan and Basque groups. And it does move it, I think, the parliamentary majority more to the left as well, which I think is positive.
And Narae, last thoughts on the coalition. What can you see, or what would you like to see? It's up to you what you want to choose. But for the future of Unidas Podemos.
Well, I would like to see a lot of things that I know they won't happen. But I'll try to be realistic here. I don't know. I think as I see my country, like if I think in Spain like 5 years ago, I see a completely different country. I mean, maybe I'm just like very, I don't know, dreamy, and or maybe I miss Spain or whatever, because I've been abroad like for like 7 years. But I think society is improving a little bit. And actually, I don't know, like for myself, I've been a Republican all my life, and that was like very like a thing you had to hide. When I remember when I was young, and my mom was like, oh, please don't say you're a Republican out loud. I mean, like, I'm not that old. I'm only 30 years old. But my family were always like afraid, like, don't say this out loud, be careful, you know, because like, and actually I got bullied when I was like a child, just like for being a Republican background and everything.
Wow.
And now yeah, it's but now it's changing. Like, I see young people talking about the Republic, talking about feminism, talking about, you know, like LGBTI rights, talking about the rent control, talking like, we need to improve this country. We want a country where everyone can be live and be free. And we're seeing as well, like, the far right is like very increasing. Well, it's always been there, but, you know, like, people being very protective with migrant people and but not with the, and as opposing the far right, like, completely opposing the fascists. When I was like young, that was like something that you don't do, because it's just like, you are the radical one, not them. And now it's like trying to change. We're trying to, I don't know, to have a more democratic country. So I think Unidas Podemos is really good for that. It's just like a visual thing, like, okay, things can be a little bit better. I mean, not, it's not going to be the dream. It's not going to be something like, I don't know, we really want to see, but it's just a beginning. I think that's what I call it. It's just like a beginning, and things are improving, very slow, but they are improving. And so our goal, most like, more like being like in the institutions, we want to create popular unity, people as just like be in their communities and taking care of each other and trying to deliver another country where it's possible. And I don't know, maybe it's like very dreamy, but, you know, like, let's begin. We like to think like the future is going to be grand. So I will say, like, Unidas Podemos is just a beginning, like, with a lot of history at the background, because, like, we're coming from like long time history, but hopefully we can keep growing, and we can keep the structure of Unidas Podemos will be stronger, and we can continue working together.
Yeah, Owen, do you think there's any risk of Unidas Podemos breaking up at all?
I think the current leadership in both formations know their future is together, and I think. The question is more, can they sort of broaden out to include other groups that have fractured off? Because I think that the question is there going to be a unity left list in the next elections, or at least in areas where you would be, you know, you would lose out if you ran separately. But I think, no, I think their future is together, you know, and, you know, no, I think it is pretty secure in that sense.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, guys, for both joining me today.
Oh, thank you. It was really nice to talk to you.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.